Ladies and gentlemen, Goody and I coming to you just as a duo today. We couldn't wait to get into the room, talk rookies together. The dust has settled around the rookie drafts of our listener league and the writers league in the RSO format. And so we wanted to revisit some of our earlier claims that we made about rookie drafts, rookie values within the RSO context. And then in the broader context, we got this whole new crop of rookies. We haven't commented heavily on them yet. So this is what we're going to get after today, a special edition of All About Reality. Matt Goodwin, good to see you, buddy. How are you?
Good to see you as well. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Let's jump right in. We're pressed for time. We're going to be doing one of these like late round podcasts, basically lightning round, talk about some rookies.
All right, let's do a side-by-side comparison of the top three, give you an idea of format. In the Writers League, we have a 10-team Superflex League, and in our Pod League, we have a 16-team Superflex League. And so we, our listeners have talked about this. For any of you that have never jumped into a Superflex format that's 16 deep, we know that right off the top, just with a little math, at best, there are two quarterbacks for everybody, so quarterback scarcity becomes real. And in the 10-team, it is also pretty scarce, and yet you have a little bit more freedom to opt for positional players in the Superflex draft. So the 16-team Superflex pod, number one was Trevor Lawrence. Number two was Justin Fields. Number three, Trey Lance. You have any strong feelings on any of the top three in our pod league, sir?
In the pod league, I think the interesting point is kind of Fields and Lance. I think Lawrence was kind of a default best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, so I don't think we really need to spend a bunch of time on that. Fields, I think, is interesting to me because the question is he went a little lower in the draft than maybe he would have, you know, at the beginning of the offseason, I would say. But I really like the fit in Chicago. I think he can do good things. I think the big thing that franchise and that fan base really hasn't a quarterback to be this excited about, you know, and probably since they won the Super Bowl in 85. So I think that's really exciting. I hope they don't rush him along too quickly. I do see the ability for him to play this season. I think everybody's kind of in love with what the 49ers, the draft capital they traded to move up for Trey Lance. And I think he's exciting in that regard. I don't really know so much about his rushing prowess. I know they're viewing him as a running quarterback, but I don't know they ran a ton at North Dakota State. So maybe you can inform me on that. But I'm excited about both those guys. I think the talking to Tim Aylesworth, who had the third pick in our pod league, I think the big thing, he was sitting on Najee Harris for a long time. And like, I think strategically he was at a crossroads. I think he has Jalen Hurts and Carson Wentz, his quarterbacks, Ryan Tannehill on a franchise tag. I think that he was, you know, admittedly going long-term versus, you know, grabbing a guy like Harris where he could plug in. And I think your team is viewed as the, you know, the gorilla in our league, basically, you know, right now based on roster and future and current talent and winning last year. So I think Harris may have fit him better this year, but you know, given what his quarterback situation was, how many, and he made an interesting point. The Eagles have a ton of draft picks if Jalen Hurts doesn't work out this year. So I think that was the most salient point, and you know, favoring him going Lance. So I think that, you know, in some order, I would expect in a 16 team super flex, I would expect these three to be in that order.
I agree with you. I would add a couple of things. In most cases, I would choose Lance over Fields at this point, precisely because of how excited I am about the organization. You and I have talked in the past. I like tying myself to organizations in real life that seems that they know how to bring people along. I'm a little bit more confident in that in San Francisco with the weapons around Trey Lance at this point. I do understand for opting for Fields in a league where there's a lot of scarcity and you actually want to try to compete right away. And Fields certainly seems to give you the opportunity of having a quarterback that'll be on the field first. I think most of us would gamble that he takes the field before Lance at some point. So that makes a little bit of sense to me there. But I don't think the difference is dramatic enough that I would ever take Fields over Lance at this point. Oddly enough, I had Fields pretty clearly as my number two quarterback prospect pre-draft though. So I am kind of deferring to situational evaluation there along the way. Now in the Writers League, a slightly different dynamic played out. Whereas you kindly called me the gorilla in the pod league, and yes, that team is fairly well assembled and coming off a championship. In the writers league, it was a disaster, and I had the first, third, and fifth picks in the writers league. So I comprised the first and third picks of this because I'm on the way other end of the scale. I'm easily the worst roster headed into this offseason, and I went Lawrence number one as well. Our fearless leader, Matt Papson, selected Harris number two, Najee Harris, and number three, I went back to Lance. I just stayed true to my super flex board. Any point of contention for you in those first three picks in the writers league?
I don't think so. I think running back scarcity is a pretty big thing there. I think Pappy already had Mahomes and Brady and even Garoppolo as quarterbacks in the writers league. I know you thought maybe he would go Trey Lance because of Garoppolo, but stacking that investment, and you know, Tom Brady seems like he's gonna play until he's, you know, he goes straight from there to the retirement home. So I think Harris fits a pretty big need for that team. And I think I like your assessments there. I do think Fields, he just oozes leadership. And I think the pause on him is just the fact he's an Ohio State quarterback and they haven't had success, obviously Haskins, but Fields did it for 2 years. And the big thing for me on Fields is you just have a lot more tape and access to him than you would have in 1 year of Haskins. I mean, if you really want to dig, he was on that QB1 show or whatever on Netflix too, which I didn't see that season. I saw Spencer Rattler's season. So you kind of get a behind the scenes look at Fields too. So I think you have more, you know, to at least get comfortable around or convince yourself that Fields is not your typical Ohio State quarterback in air quotes.
You're right. I do love that notion there. We're getting a little beyond scouting the helmet here. I think it's totally unfair to look at Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields. The kids are totally different and the style of play is totally different. And in fantasy, we know we've been much more inclined towards the legs. Dropping his blistering 40 time, Justin Fields did. He's a totally different quarterback. He's a dual threat. He's a substantial threat to score with his legs as well as his arms. He can go through his progressions. By all accounts, he just scored as one of the more intelligent quarterbacks that we've had as a prospect coming out, like in terms of his testing in evaluating plays. Like, I loved the kid as a second overall prospect. Part of me, like my heart aches. I got excited, was texting friends of mine when he was falling. And I looked at the teams in front of the Vikings at one point. I was like, oh my gosh, Fields is about to fall to the Vikings. And I got hyped. The Vikings were getting hyped apparently. Yeah. And then the Bears jumped in. Having said that, I do think Pappy made a good evaluation of scarcity in the league. I think that's the biggest recommendation you and I have talked about a lot. I looked at it even in our 10-team Superflex to the point where I could have gone in three position players with my first, third, and fifth picks just to kind of throw a curveball to people, right? Like to game theory it and know if I went Harris first, for example, that I'm pretty sure Pappy would have felt almost arm twisted into going Lawrence. It would be interested to hear how he would react if Lawrence was still on the board at 1.02, you know?
For sure. I mean, one other thing I just thought of, and I think this is probably salient for people in all their leagues this year. I think depending on where you are, contention status, if you're at the top of draft boards, you may have got there by a favorable trade and just need a missing piece. You may have a little rockier team like you describe in the writers league. But with you know, folks being in salary cap purgatory this particular year, hopefully it'll go up. I think Pappy also made a decision that was kind of financial. Like you can plug in your running back two or running back one with a guy like Harris when you already have the two super flex quarterbacks at $7-8 million a year and not chase Aaron Jones or somebody else in the free agency auction that where you're going to have to maybe pay even in depressed prices with a salary cap, like $15 million and up. Like I think Aaron Jones is probably still a $20 million a year running back, but I think based on like the fact that like teams just aren't going to have the stacks to throw out as much that, you know, some of that crazy bidding that you've seen in years past, there may be some pause on. So That's where you plug in a guy like Harris in that case. If you feel like, you know, hey, most of the rest of my starting lineup is pretty nice and intact, and go from there. And if you're on the other side of the pendulum, you know, you have a little more flexibility or creativity because, like, you know, you can do some things with long-term contracts in a different way.
That's well said. And I want to build on that scarcity talk for a moment as we blaze through. So the Writers League played out Lawrence, Harris, Lance. Nick Andrews opted Chase, which was a strong call.
At the 104, yeah.
And I think it's the right call. I think I probably would have gone Chase at 105 if he had not selected him, if he had opted for Fields. But again, I stuck true to my board and just went with Fields because my team is not, as you described, like in immediate contention status. I prefer the upside in the potential league winning upside, and kind of acknowledging that one of those guys, if not more of them, is probably going to bust, even Trevor Lawrence or Trey Lance or Justin Fields. I think, you know, I have to insulate myself from that. And I have a lot of first round picks again next year. So I feel like, in a way, what you just described with running backs is precisely right. I kind of want them to be the jewel that comes in at the end after I've built the team around them, right? With a little bit more surety at the other positions. And then I'll go get those rookie running backs that'll produce in year one. That's what I'm looking for. So that's why I opted Fields over Etienne or Pitts. That would have been my other consideration at 105.
Yeah.
And went next. And then a little bit of a curveball. Devontae Smith went 7. And then Pitts didn't go till 8 in the Writers.
Yeah, I'm a little puzzled by some of these moves, actually.
Okay.
I'm looking at where Nick had picked Chase at 104, and you know, we'd have to talk to him about it, but like, and maybe it'll come in the Writers League write-up, but maybe he's just playing the Joe Burrow stack there, but his only other quarterback is Derek Carr. I mean, he has AJ Brown and Justin Jefferson at receivers. He has Julio Jones like plugged in as a flex. So, and there was some receiver depth, later on he got Terrace Marshall, Josh Palmer in the same rookie draft. So, I mean, for me, I think he doesn't have a starting tight end. I think Pitts would have plugged in very nicely there. I mean, I'm not knocking the pick of Chase because I think Chase was in a tier by himself, but I think wide receiver is, I think people get wide receiver happy sometimes because you see the things like the reception perception and all that. And it's a position to get really excited about because that's something that I think you can predict more easily than you can some of these other positions. But I think it was right for the pick in there to take, unless he just didn't like the Bears or Justin Fields. I think Fields or Chase, if I was sitting in those shoes with what Nick had at receiver, I think I would have gone a different direction.
That's fair enough. And I'll round out the first round for you and comment as you just did. The 9th pick was Javonte Williams. The 10th pick was Zach Wilson. Mm-hmm. That's pretty true to my board for the top 10 that I have in a super flex league. Though in many cases, especially bigger super flex leagues, I would bump Williams out in favor of Mac Jones just because of quarterback scarcity in most of those super flex, the deeper super flex leagues. But having said that, Pitts falling to 8 is really interesting to me. And certainly Pitts falling, Devontae Smith is, full disclosure, the guy that I would say is my guy after that top tier. But I would say my top tier is pretty clearly in single quarterback leagues, the 3 running backs and Chase and Pitts. So it's a 5 deep top tier. Like that's what I want to be in the top 5 in a single quarterback league. And I want one.
Right.
And then, but I have very kind of definitively Devontae Smith as in a tier of his own. I have him 6 all by himself. Like he's my next tier. So, So I actually like that he went here, but I don't like that he went above Pitts. And that's where, and I think that's Bernard sticking true to his brand, right? Like that's gotta be that a little bit.
Right, yeah. I mean, with tight ends, I mean, he had Tyler Higbee, who find Matt Stafford could be, you know, a little better, but the Pitts thing is interesting. I mean, certainly felt to fit a need for Kyle English, who had traded me for Gesicki earlier this offseason. I think that, I'm surprised by a little of it. I mean, I think that The tricky thing for me is even in one quarterback leagues, I agree with you, the three running backs in theory, Pitts and Chase, you know, definitely fit needs. But depending on how QB needy you are, if you're one of these teams who just lost Deshaun Watson, for instance, and I'm not saying do this every year, but this year in 2021, when you have depressed caps and cap stuff, like, and you can lock up a quarterback for, you know, who you think is elite. So like, i.e. Trevor Lawrence, maybe Lance or Fields, depending on how your evaluation is. If you're grabbing that guy at about $6.5-7 million a year in the middle of that draft, I would potentially this year only advocate like going one of those guys over Devontae Smith if I'm the guy you just lost, like a Deshaun Watson, or, you know, there has, you know, some of the old guard with Breeze retiring. I think there's some, you know, maybe you don't get amnesty and you're dealing with that contract still or something. So I think there's opportunity if you feel that the Lawrences, the Fields, the Lances end up being a top 12 quarterback for, you know, the life of that the rookie deal.
Yeah, well said. And I actually agree, right? You have to, again, you and I, this is where we maybe are most similar as players, is we both love value. We both love the game. We both love to negotiate. And a good driver of that over the course of the year is to make sure that you identify scarcity and to get ahead of the curve on that. And for our listeners, anyone that plays in leagues with us, and I would recommend, as you look around your own roster and make down cuts down, look around to see what the cap situation is for everybody before the auction. Because I've actually been trading away really good players if I see a one-to-one replacement for them in the auction, knowing that I have a lot of cap room and I can get an asset plus. So for example, I traded away Terry McLaurin on a 4-year, $22 million per year deal for a first rounder, knowing, not that I valued the first rounder more than McLaurin, just knowing that Calvin Ridley was sitting there and nobody had enough cap space to pay much more than that for him. So I would get the one-to-one replacement for a player I valued similarly, and I get a first on top of it because I have a lot of cap in that particular league. So I think that's that, to what you were saying, that's exactly right. Like, right, when you look around at this cap depressed area, you got to use these rookie contracts as leverage too. Like, okay, how do I take advantage of that auction market in addition to this great player that I'm hoping to get in the rookie draft right here? So
for sure. I think just this year, you just be, because we don't know what the cap's going to be next year or anything else, you assume this is probably a low point. So you really want to be on top. This isn't the year you can sleep on stuff. I think you have to be really on top of things and just really know what your league situation is and try to pounce and exploit, you know, to the best of your game theory abilities.
Speaking of good game theory, I was really complimentary of you after the pod league draft in particular. I meant it. I thought you did a lot of good work there and played the board really well. That the rest of the top 10 in that league rounded out the same as the writers league, but just a different order. So there it was Pitt 6, sorry, Wilson, pardon me. Let's go all the way back up to 4. I didn't even tell 4 to our listeners. After the three quarterbacks, Lawrence, Fields, and Lance, number 4 was Najee Harris. Number 5 was Zach Wilson. Number 6 was Pitts. 7 was Chase, then Etienne, Javonte Williams, and Devontae Smith. So again, I like people being true to the board. Mac Jones came off right next. Like, that's really kind of, other than switching those two, that's probably where I would have played it. And so I like that. I think our listeners are real sharp. I think that's a really good league now with really good new owners that we've got in too to replace some of the ones that we had. And I think this is going to be a fun to see how it plays out. I think people really stuck true to their boards. But having said that, let's go a little bit deeper in the draft. Talk to your moves during the course of it and give a little window into the game theory behind it, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, sure. So in the pod league, coming into the offseason, I only had pick 203, so that was the 19th pick overall and would have been a second rounder. I had three players on expiring contracts of you know, significant value: Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers, and Christian McCaffrey. So I figured I wanted to try to get some type of assets from one of those guys. I also needed to clear some cap space. So I traded Devontae Adams, kind of taking away that stack, which I love, and who knows what Rodgers' situation is. That's for another day. But traded Davante Adams kind of begrudgingly for 111 and 116, thinking with Tim Aylesworth, thinking that I could, you know, 111, I was probably just replacing Adams with a cheaper receiver, so I was saving $20 million in cap. Oh, I also got Deontay Johnson, one-year deal for $4 million in this trade. So I thought Davante Johnson's, you know, I'm high on him. I think he'll be just a good, solid guy this year. I wanted to extend, you know, then I'm putting my chips in on potentially extending, you know, or tagging Rodgers and McCaffrey.
Let me clarify rather for our readers for a second. You maximized Devontae's value before any of the Rodgers news broke, right? So you were able to two first rounders and Deontay Johnson and get out from under that kind of weird position you're in RSO. If you have three guys you need to extend, you know you're going to only really have the cap and an extension to use on two guys you love. So you do kind of have to think about what's the fate of the third player going to be. So well done there. So now you're sitting at 11, you're sitting at 16, which is the last pick of the first round.
Right.
Deontay Johnson, go for it.
Right. And yeah, thanks for setting the table there. I think that's important. And then Rodgers is my only quarterback on that roster. I traded Jared Goff away in the offseason. Cortland Sutton and some other stuff, and Noah Fant actually. So yeah, so at 11, I kind of thought it was a default pick, 16 team super flex. I basically assumed five quarterbacks gone, three running backs gone, Pitts, Chase. So I'm pretty much, you know, like I didn't even watch a ton of tape. I'm like, Devontae Smith is probably who I'm taking. You know, I was between Smith and Waddle, and I like both those guys almost equally. I just thought Smith was going into a slightly better situation right away. Even though I think Waddle has some, you know, if the speed kills thing hits with Waddle, like he could, you know, turn into another really, really good receiver, I would think. So anyways, as the 10th pick happened, Devontae Smith got picked at 10. So I wasn't really necessarily looking at Mac Jones. I knew when I was on deck, basically I was watching, you know, we were doing a Zoom chat with the league or whatever. And I was basically watching Alabama tape of Devontae Smith, and because I get Mac Jones in that process too. And so Mac Jones fell to me, and, you know, obviously, it's, you know, I kind of ran to the podium. I'm not necessarily like super high on him or anything else, but in a 16 team super flex, quarterbacks just do not fall that far. And so you got to take whomever you can. And even if he sits for a year, like I just felt like that was kind of a default pick for me. So I felt really good about that. And I think the league admitted that was pretty good value. In terms of my next pick, I had the opportunity to trade for the 12th pick, which would have been back-to-back picks. And I almost did that because I did like Jalen Waddle that much. But I held off on that just thinking that maybe there would be another move in play. So I had the 16th pick and I had 203 still, which is what I would have had to package for Jalen Waddle. And I said, well, I still have some needs. So I wanted to kind of control the back part of that draft because I think that that's the last pick in the first round, the fifth year extension. I just think they're, you know, and there were some nice players still on the board at the receiver position. So I think it was probably no secret or surprise for our listeners that I like Elijah Moore. Talked to Sly Johnson on the last podcast about that. And just really like the route running ability. I mean, Sly's point about him training all his receivers and his running backs to basically be Swiss Army knives and play any of the positions. And I think we start seeing comps like guys like Steve Smith and I mean Antonio Brown from a route running perspective. Just means those guys can play inside or outside, and you know maybe they win more inside. But I just really like what the kid's about and Elijah Moore. And so I actually traded up to 15 to get Elijah Moore. So I traded a second the year for next year, as well as my 203 to move up and get more, just to make sure I had that, with still keeping the 16th pick, because I figured there'd be, you know, if there was still someone on people's boards at that point that I could drum up some trade interest. I did drum up a lot of trade interest and ended up trading out of 16. I think Luke, you were looking to get up for someone, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Ended up trading with Ryan Krawczyk, who used the selection on Michael Carter. I got a couple seconds in for 22 that I think should be pretty high based on the team who those were tied to. And then I got 2.13, which I just like, which is really late and, you know, in a draft like this. And I ended up picking Kyle Trask just as having another quarterback option, just thinking like dart throw late. But why don't we talk about the one pick you made? You traded up for 203. I know, just to be clear, and I do want to talk about one thing at the 116. I know I'm going on for a little bit. So I think I was kind of figuring out which players were of interest at that point, that who was trading up, because I had offers to trade down one pick, trade down another pick, like to 201 to 202, just kick the can a little bit and still maybe get my guy and pick up something else. Ultimately, I didn't necessarily think that was enough, and I like these second rounders that I got. But the players that I think were being coveted by end up going in the next three picks. So 116, the trade I made, Michael Carter was one. Then Terrace Marshall, I believe, went 201, someone that Marcus was trying to trade up for. And 202 was Rondale Moore. And then I know at 203, you picked Kellen Mond. You traded up to get Kellen Mond, trade a few future, I think, seconds, maybe a few future seconds. So walk me through the interest in Kellen Mond, and also just kind of what you – I think there's a lot of strategy in differing opinions in both leagues about Michael Carter. I think most people have him as running back five behind Trey Sermon and the big three. And the question is, though, like, with good receivers like Terrace Marshall, Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore types on the board, who you're gravitating more towards, even if you have a positional need, but as Carter was a college timeshare running back?
I almost always gravitate toward running back. But as someone who, my worst tout last year, was really pushing my chips in on Keyshawn Vaughn in a lot of places, Carter feels eerily similar like a Keyshawn Vaughn, right? A talented running back who was elevated by his situation and is currently being elevated by a really weak running back class. Whereas Keyshawn Vaughn was being pushed down by a really talented running back class, Carter, I don't think, would have sniffed the top 10 of last year's class. And that's like pretty scary that we have him up here in this estimation. And so, as I told you before, Devontae Smith's kind of a tier of his own for me after the first six in non-Superflex and the first 10 in Superflex. You and I share the same first 10. And then all those guys that you've alluded to, again, I think this league was pretty sharp. Waddle, Bateman, Sermon, Elijah Moore, Marshall and Rondale Moore are all in a tier, that next tier for me. Though I do have a lot.
Yeah, Marshall went 201, Rondale Moore 202, Mon 203 for our listeners.
So yeah, so like I actually, Michael Carter was the only misfit there. Like I think he's being elevated by situation rather than talent. I think the rest of those guys can stand on talent. And I understand why. Like I think you want to kind of take a swing at a running back sometimes over somebody that maybe has a more obscure path to targets, like Terrace Marshall at this point. Like it's harder to kind of pencil him in for those targets.
Right.
I do like Elijah Moore. Again, that's one of my complimentary things of you. Like this year, I like him probably like as much. I just haven't found myself in that sweet spot in the draft that justifies the confluence of draft capital and my love for Moore, right? Like that. And I think you rightly are moving to get him, right? Like get your guy. And that leads me to the Mond pick, right?
Yeah.
Since you were really from when I think 113 or 114, I was like, okay, here's the part of the draft where the person I'm offering 209 and two future seconds will not be insulted by my offer. Like that's really was my rationale. I was like, maybe that entices them. Maybe they don't have a guy that they like at the end here.
Right.
And so literally everybody from 14, 15, 16, you got the offer. I just said, I'm going to give all the future seconds that I have because I value them differently as a contender, right? Like I prefer to kind of maximize my capacity to win now. And as the Kirk Cousins owner, I am doubly nervous that if anything goes awry, whether with his skill or with his injury, I want to make sure that I have his backup on my team in a year where I'm contending. And yep. That could come in with his legs and still do something, right? And still help me keep contending. And I'm also a Vikings fan. And so you rightly, I at one point we joked in the text, I was like, I'll tell you who I want. And you're like, you like didn't need me to. Like, you knew exactly what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Like
and you made me an offer at 116 too. And that was the time where I kind of paused things in the draft. We did a slow draft and I had my son's Little League game and people were getting mad at me because I traded up for the other pick and we were just waiting to formalize that. And so like, I kind of sat on it overnight because I had some offers and we're trying to make things, you know, work and give the people on the East Coast who may have been asleep an opportunity to trade. So I was clearly trading there because I liked Carter, I didn't want to invest that pick with, you know, especially with some needs on someone who had, you know, fourth round draft capital basically.
Yep. That was my one frustration in the draft. It was annoying because that owner at 116 was like, yeah, you and I have a deal. Except Goody asked me to wait for him. And I was like, oh my gosh, are we going to do this right now? He was like,
I know. It's like Matthew Berry all over again with the fishbowl or whatever.
You say, just from a, I wasn't worried that Mond was going to go at 16. That wasn't what made me.
Yeah.
And to Stacey's credit, he's ultimately the one that traded me the 203 because he didn't have anybody that he totally loved and just kept it.
Right. He definitely didn't like it. He traded down a few times in this draft. He definitely didn't like anybody.
And so I think really intelligently, he accrued a lot of capital. That's what you should do if you don't have a guy you're trying to get. And so he did the right thing too. Right. I was frustrated because of the 16th pick in this league is the fifth year option. And on a quarterback, that made a heck of a lot more sense for me, just like in the real NFL. Like I would have.
Right, for sure. And for me, that thing had a little more value than, you know, the 209 and a couple future seconds where, you know, in a team that I think is strong. So that was my rationale, not doing a deal with you, but like, I certainly had reasonable, every offer I got for that pick, I think was reasonable in its own right. You know, even if just to trade down one pick and get a future second, you know, I think that was like 23, you know, whatever. I think David Montgomery actually like got traded in that league for essentially 207, which, you know, was crazy. That and a little bit of salary dump. Which was kind of surprising. I know David Montgomery's in a crowded backfield, but Marcus was kind of planting his flag like, hey, I want a quarterback. So he picked Davis Mills, 23rd overall at 207. Yeah, 207. So why don't we quickly, I'll share what the second round ended up being. Terrace Marshall, 2.01, Rondale Moore, 202, Kellen Mond, 203. Amon St. Brown, 204, Kenny Gainwell, 205, Kadarius Toney, 206, Davis Mills, 207, Pat Freiermuth at 208. I like that pick for Lucha. Dyami Brown at 209, Amari Rogers at 210, Chuba Hubbard at 211, Josh Palmer at 212, Kyle Trask to me at 213, Ramondre Stevenson, 214, Nico Collins, who I kind of like this pick as maybe like this year's Chase Claypool at 215. And I'm blanking on the guy's first name, maybe Cornell Powell, yep. Receiver for the Chiefs, as 216 in the pod league.
Yeah, very good. And I have to go shape the future minds of America, but I do think you did a good job of highlighting. That's a little draft strategy from us. We like these rookie contracts a lot. We encourage you in RSO to keep attention to those that are rising through the process. Carter and Sermon keep inching higher and higher. And if someone takes them ahead of Devontae Smith and some of those wide receiver talents, I think you find yourself in a good spot. Even Elijah Moore, I think I would take over, certainly over Carter. And I could make a case for myself to take Elijah Moore over Trey Sermon as well.
Right. I think those receiver outcomes are just more likely than someone with fourth round draft capital who fits the scheme well, but was also a college timeshare running back. So I think we're on the same page here. We're going to wrap up quickly. Just don't forget NFLPA licensed t-shirts, Breaking Tea. They have a pretty cool one, Jamar of the Jungle. I'm looking at really cool Justin Jefferson one that I think my co-host needs to pick up now. Was it say like Gritty or something?
Yeah, it's him doing the Gritty. Yep.
Yeah, doing the Gritty. That's really cool. I sent him that one the other day. Track Speed, DK Metcalf, a lot of Justin Fields stuff. So if you want to save 15% off some sweet t-shirts, use the code Wendell, WENDELL 15. and pick up some of the new Breaking Tea shirts. We thank them, breakingtea.com, for the latest wearable moments.
Awesome. And this has been another episode of All About Reality. We'll be right back.